Hey there, welcome back to 7-Minute Books. I'm Sam, and today we're diving into Neil Kishany's And Sophie. I have to ask, did this book change how you see the economy, or just confirm what you already suspected?
Oh, it definitely shifted things for me. I mean, I thought I understood basic economics, but this book shows you it's not a settled science at all. It's a conversation that's been going on for thousands of years, with all these big personalities arguing about what really drives wealth and value.
Exactly. And it starts way back with Aristotle, which I wasn't expecting. He wasn't thinking about GDP or stock markets. For him, the economy was about managing your household to live a good, virtuous life. He even had a term for the bad kind of money-making, crematistics.
Right, and that moral suspicion of profit and usury carried right through the Middle Ages. The church said lending money with interest was a sin. Back then, the economy was a moral stage, not a growth machine.
Then the world opens up with the discovery of the Americas, and suddenly there's all this gold and silver flooding into Europe. And you get the mercantilists, who think a nation's wealth is literally its pile of precious metals.
They believed the world's wealth was a fixed pie, so the only way for one country to get richer was to take a slice from another. That led to tariffs, colonies, and a ton of conflict.
Adam Smith comes along and just blows that whole idea up. He says wealth isn't gold, it's what a country can produce. And the key is the division of labor. His example, the pin factory, is incredible.
Yeah, by breaking pin making into tiny steps, you multiply output by thousands. And what makes it all work? Self-interest. The baker doesn't bake for you out of kindness, he does it for his own profit. But Smith says it's like an invisible hand guiding that self-interest to serve everyone.
It's a beautiful, optimistic vision. But then the Industrial Revolution happens, and you get factories full of women and children working in awful conditions for next to nothing. And that's when Karl Marx steps in.
Marx agreed with Smith that labor creates value, but he argued that in capitalism, workers are robbed. The capitalist pays them just enough to survive, then sells what they made for way more. That difference, surplus value, is profit, and Marx called it theft.
He predicted the conflict between workers and owners would only get worse until there's a revolution. And of course, those ideas inspired huge political movements that shaped the whole 20th century.
But while Marx was predicting revolution, other thinkers were trying to make capitalism work better. The marginal revolutionaries, Jevons, Menger, Walras, they shifted the focus to individual choice and psychology.
And they came up with this concept of marginal utility, which explains why diamonds are more expensive than water. Water is hugely useful, but because it's plentiful, the extra satisfaction from one more glass is low. Diamonds are useless for survival, but they're scarce, so the marginal utility is high.
That gave economists a mathematical model of rational choice. It's elegant, but it leaves out a lot of messy human reality. And that reality came crashing back with the Great Depression.
The old classical theory said a slump should fix itself. If there's unemployment, wages should fall until it's profitable to hire again. But in the 1930s, wages fell and unemployment stayed high. The economy was just stuck.
That's where John Maynard Keynes comes in. He said the economy can get trapped in a liquidity trap. People hoard cash, businesses won't invest. And the government has to step in as the spender of last resort. Borrow money, build roads and bridges, put money in people's pockets, create demand.
That was a direct challenge to the idea that government should keep its hands off. Keynes basically created the modern welfare state. And for a generation after World War II, his ideas led to stability and growth.
But then the 1970s brought stagflation, high unemployment, and high inflation at the same time. Keynesians didn't have a good answer. So in comes Milton Friedman and the monetarists.
Friedman said inflation is always caused by printing too much money. He argued that government intervention usually makes things worse. So he pushed for deregulation, lower taxes, and letting markets run free. That became neoliberalism, and it shaped Reagan and Thatcher.
And the book doesn't stop there. It takes us through Schumpeter's creative destruction, game theory, behavioral economics, Kahneman and Tversky showing how irrational we really are, and development economists like Amartya Sen, who said we should measure progress by people's capabilities, not just income.
The part that really got me is that Kishtany keeps coming back to this idea: economics isn't neutral. It's entangled with politics, morality, and our vision of a good society. The invisible hand, the class struggle, the government spender, these are competing visions of human nature.
Yeah, the book doesn't pretend to have a final answer. It just gives you the tools to think about the big questions more clearly. Should we focus on growth or equality? Should the government intervene or stay out? The economy is a human creation, shaped by our ideas and choices.
The one thing I'm taking away is that every economic idea came from someone trying to solve a real problem in their time. None of them are perfect, but understanding where they come from helps me see the world differently.
And honestly, if you want to go deeper, the whole library is over on 7minutebooks.com/app, with over 6,000 fiction and nonfiction titles you can read or listen to in any language. It starts at $2.99 a month, $9.99 a year, or $19.99 once for lifetime access. So the real takeaway from is that the economy isn't a machine, it's a conversation. And now you have the voices of the great thinkers in your head. We'll see you in the next one.